Future Friday.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to another episode of Future Friday here on CHMA. My name's Hamish Hallett, and I'm joined by John Beasy once again. And for this week's episode, we'll be talking about the future of finance. So in kind of recent times, or potentially over the last, like, 21st century, let's just say that, our finances have become a lot more digitalized, very much, you know, less kind of paper-wise in terms of how we kind of view our money. It's become a lot more kind of on the internet, such as like online banking. And of course, we have, you know, a lot of these kind of online services becoming kind of quite new. So things like FinTech, Libra is now planning on launching this year, although there's still question marks around Libra. You've also got like contactless cards, PayPal, and online banking. So John, how do you feel about, you know, finances becoming more digital? What's your kind of gut instinct about finances becoming digital?
If you ask me what my gut instinct about finance, it's generally not a good thing.
Really?
It's finance.
Yeah.
But in many ways, it reduces transactions costs and makes things a lot cheaper and easier to do. So it can definitely, it definitely could, you know, generate a lot of wealth and help spread that around. But at the same time, it's finance. The point is that it goes to whoever has money already.
Of course.
So it depends on how you do it, and digital technologies also allow for different kinds of things to be commodified and traded, and potentially things that we would maybe not want commodified and traded.
Yeah, of course. I think it's like with all kinds of forms of technology, it's putting our privacy a little bit at risk as well. Even though we'll kind of speak a little bit more about the negatives a bit later on this episode, but kind of, yeah, you kind of talked about the fact that, you know, it's a lot more kind of efficient to transfer sort of money, because I find it's personally a bit more efficient, because let's say I want to pay for something, I just get my card out, tap my card on, and it's done. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's a lot more kind of efficient in that sense. So I would say, like, are there any big positives as well that finance has become more digital, or in terms of like, it has increased efficiency, but
well, the big thing is transactions costs.
Yeah.
So the transactions costs in economics are the costs of doing a transaction. How much you can't do anything for free. There has to be some kind of cost, either in terms of energy or a middleman or something else. And a lot of digital technologies are continually reducing transactions costs. Like, let's take something like Uber, for example. Before, it's really hard to coordinate someone who's just driving around to, you know, stop by and pick you up. Like, how to coordinate that. But with Uber, they make the coordination very easy. They reduce the transaction costs of trying to create that kind of system and make those kinds of transactions. So it makes it a lot easier to make trades and investments and things that you couldn't do before, like things like crowdfunding, crowdsourcing. That's, you know, I mean, fundraising is a pretty old idea, but now it makes it a lot, the cost of giving is a lot cheaper. And now, you know, as transactions costs get lower and lower, you can, you know, minimums of donations can go down from, you know, you need $25, $10, $5, 5 cents. You can donate 3 cents if you want, and it won't, and they'll still do it because it's not worth more to process the transaction than the transaction itself.
Yeah, no, totally. It's the it's just the ease of kind of doing it. It's, yeah, lowering the transaction cost. It's, you know, the fact that you can send money across the world, which is pretty easy. Because for me, it's, yeah, for example, like, obviously living, like, I'm kind of staying here in Canada for like at least a year. And like, if, let's say, my parents, I need to give you some money for example, they can just bank transfer it really, really easily, you know, and that way it kind of saves so much time. It's a lot more efficient. And yeah, what you've been saying, it's been, you know, lowering, you know, the transaction costs, which I think is, but then who kind of benefits from this? Like, would you say it's the consumers? Would you say it's businesses? Who kind of mostly benefits from this in terms of this, terms of finance becoming digitalized? Sorry.
I mean, there's always, there's benefits that can be had all around.
Yeah.
To what extent those benefits are equitably distributed is a different question. Because finance tends to go towards, you know, the whole purpose of finance is like, I have wealth. I need to hold it in some sort of vehicle that is allowing it to at the very minimum maintain its value relative to inflation, and I want it to be worth as much in the future as it is now at the minimum. And that's what a lot of these things are. As you lower transactions costs, it becomes easier and easier to trade in different things. And then you can, there's a particular drive in capitalism to always find and expand and create new markets, because as certain markets become increasingly mature and developed, the profitability tends to fall to zero. That's a tendency in a, that's a basic thing in perfect competition in economics. That's, perfect competition's a different question, but it's still there. There's still the tendency to fall to zero. So you always have that drive to constantly create and open new markets and new things to trade in, even if things that may not have been traded in before, or things that you're just create out of thin air that don't really exist in the real world, only insofar as they exist in some kind of digital blockchain that only exists to serve that function.
Yeah. Mm. And it's kind of, yeah, you kind of talked about, yeah.
No, like let's take one example. There's a company in China called SelfCell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's how it works is, from the perspective of the, there essentially is idea is that you create, I guess, digital tradable tokens in yourself, mm-hmm. and you sell them, and other people can trade them.
Right.
So the idea is that, it's kind of like a Kickstarter for people.
Yep.
In that, at least from the person's perspective, it's like a crowdsourced loan. You say, I think I can, I have an idea for some product. I think it's going to be worth a lot. I think I could be a really great engineer, but I need to get an engineering degree. You think you have something to offer, but you need, capital to do that. You either need capital to start your business, or you need to fund your education or whatever. So the idea is that these people who are on SelfCell as investors can look around and see, I think you will be worth $1 million in the future. I'm going to invest in you. So they mm-hmm. give you the capital up. They trade you money. In exchange, they get a little, a tradable future in you.
Mm.
And then other investors can then start trading these, futures amongst themselves. Once the person got their initial capital, they're not getting that. But the tradable futures in that person, the investors can trade that amongst themselves as much as they want and profit off it as much as they can. Mm. But none of that goes to the person.
No,
all that goes between them. And now that they've, given them money, they now have a future claim on that person's income. They have to pay that money back.
Yeah, okay.
So now there's opportunities for both capital appreciation and income generation.
Mm.
So you've created a financial commodity and a human being.
Is that good or is that bad?
Depends. It depends on how we kind of create and enforce these kinds of things. Mm. There's another example of in the United States. There's a man who, beginning in 2008,
yeah,
began selling shares in himself. He decided that he was worth $100,000 and divided himself into 100,000 $1 shares. Started selling them.
Right. Okay.
And the idea was to create community through capitalism. That's actually what it says on his website. And it's supposed to, the idea is that it would allow, the idea was supposed to be an experiment in him not making certain decisions for himself.
Okay.
So yeah. He would basically present certain questions to his shareholders and have them vote on it.
So he's like,
So
he's literally like a commodity or something. Yeah.
Very much. Absolutely. Yeah. And so the idea is that, he kind of wants an experiment in not making decisions for himself. That's fair. But then it's, the people stop looking at him like a human being,
yeah.
and start looking at him as a commodity. That's because the idea thinking, is yeah. that he says that while capital appreciation isn't the isn't the goal, it may be a side effect. Mm. And on these comments, you can see different questions like, you know, should I, you know, what should I do? Should I do this or this? Should I renew my Spotify subscription? Should I engage my girlfriend?
Mm.
And your shareholders revote. And the idea is that he follows what his, he does what his shareholders tell him to.
Oh, wow.
Now he still has, he still has an 89% stake in himself. He's right. only sold 11% of his shares, but all his shares are non-voting shares. He still has agenda-setting power.
Okay.
He still gets. He still chooses what questions get presented to his shareholders, but he doesn't have veto. Now he set the system up himself, but the idea is, like, let's imagine a world where that's, you know, something that's more widespread or more common.
Of course.
What happens once your interests diverge from the interests of your shareholders? Because your shareholders view you as a commodity, as a vehicle for profit. And you can see that in some of the comments on these questions. You know, the guy, I saw one comment where a guy was like, hey, you know, I want more capital appreciation. I want you to do more things to make your shares worth more. And so what happens when people start doing that? What happens if, you know, your shareholders start saying things like, hey, I want you to take a second job. No, I don't want you to hang out with your girlfriend. I want you to do X, Y, or Z because I want you to be making more money for me. And, you know, at what point, where's the legal relationship in this?
Of course.
What's their status? And if they're, you know, compelled to do so, well, that's just slavery with multiple owners.
It loses the autonomy of this individual, even though he's been viewed as a commodity. It sounds really weird. But then,
you see what I mean by the commodification of things we might not want commodified? We
not want to, yeah. I think ourselves, because we view ourselves as consumers, not the commodity. We actually are the ones buying commodities. Do you feel like you agree with that, or?
People often see themselves like that.
Yeah, most of us like see ourselves as like wanting to buy stuff, and we see ourselves as the consumer buying the commodity. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, it's like then changing yourself into this commodity. It's like, yeah, it kind of creates a really weird relationship. Like, I'm trying to get my head around it. Was the guy doing this just for like an experiment, or was he generally like being serious about this? If you know, I don't know if you're.
He's pretty serious about it. He was doing it as an experiment, but he's still he's still doing it. He's been doing it since like for what, 12 years?
Yeah.
And like his shares have, the thing is, like, that's the thing is, his shares have appreciated.
Mm.
They started off at $1 per share.
Oh, so they've gone like up. Yeah.
They peaked at $20 a share in 2012, 20-fold increase. I believe his brother sold his shares, and I think they might have sold them at that point. And then.
Why would your brother sell that? That's, oh my God.
Because, you know, if he invested $1,000 and, you know, then increased 20-fold, he just got $20,000.
Wow.
And now the shares are worth $5.
Okay.
Now they're worth $6. Last I checked was 7 months ago. So.
Yeah, sure. No, so it must have like changed exactly because the market changes all the time. Mm-hmm. But like, God, that is so screwed up. So, yeah. And would you say more people are going to do this, do you think? Or do you think, relating this back to like last week's, is this like a possible future, or is this could happen kind of future? Like, obviously we're not predicting it, but we're like enforce
that. I would again say that those are the same, they're all possible. It's all possible. It's a possible future.
Yeah.
Like, you can take self-sell, for example, as a different kind, as a different variant. And that's one that's, you know, the American version is just, that's just one guy. Self-sell is like a whole company.
Yeah,
that, you know, does create these shareable futures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's kind of really interesting that one individual wants to kind of like make himself as a commodity. You know, it's very, very interesting. And another thing which finance has seen recently is, because we got, I kind of mentioned about Libra. So I've said that it's planning on launching. It was planning on launching 2020, and I don't know if it is going to still because. So if people don't know what Libra is, so this is is it owned by Facebook, isn't it? Ish. I don't know. Okay, so it's like partly owned, and it's seen as like some cryptocurrency. Maybe you know a little bit more about it.
It's basically a Facebook's cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Facebook, it's run by the Calibra Corporation,
sure,
which is a joint venture between Facebook, some venture capitalist place funds, Visa, MasterCard were involved, but you said they're not in, they're
yeah,
not in there
so,
anymore?
Yeah, so Libra started off in 20, because I've got something on here. So like Libra started off in 2017. Mm. It was actually only worked on by one person. And then by February 2019, so last year, like last, literally this time last year, more than 50 engineers were working on the project. Mm. So I think Facebook wants to, like, did Facebook? Yeah, I think Facebook said like it wants to use it, or Libra, or they're having
like. So there's the Libra like blockchain network.
Yeah,
that's the underlying technology that the cryptocurrency will run on.
Yeah.
So Facebook, of course, wants to use that network.
It. Okay.
So sure. it will use that network, but the financial aspects will that run on top of it are kind of separate.
Okay. Fair enough.
So it's kind of like, you know, Messenger might run using Calibra's framework.
Oh.
But sure. Like, and so we can incorporate using Libra in Messenger, but it's a separate.
It's a separate thing.
It's more like that's the protocol upon which Libra's built on, but you can build other things on top of it as well.
Okay. Sure. I think I know what you mean. Okay. Fair enough. But, yeah, so like, yeah, I think it has been said that they want like they want to use it. Mm-hmm. However, they will only launch it when like quote unquote appropriate approvals have been made. So I think it was back in 2019, like late 2019, around September or so. Can't remember the exact month, but you know, U.S. senators were meeting up with Mark Zuckerberg and was talking about this currency being kind of used and stuff, and. You know, and it's only being, and then Mark Zuckerberg did say in these kind of meetings that it will only be launched when it's actually completely approved by, you know, U.S. senators, maybe even state governments. But then, yeah, what you said about like, first of all, it was like eBay, MasterCard, PayPal, like Visa, Mercado Pago, I think it is, I don't know how to pronounce it. They were all involved in this, but then they've actually left in October 2019. They all left all the holdings from Libra, which is quite interesting actually to see. I don't know why that was the case. I didn't really see much in terms of why these people kind of left. Maybe it's because they felt like it was taking too long, or they didn't want like political pressure. Maybe, I don't know. So my kind of question is, why has there been such a slight backlash with Libra, even though it's like, you could argue it's quite a good thing, but why is there such a backlash week specifically with Libra?
So Libra is it's different than other cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. because it's the way in which Facebook wants it to be used. Well, one, people have a concern with it because one, it's Facebook.
Cool.
Facebook doesn't have a lot of public trust.
Yep.
So one, people are skeptical towards anything that Facebook wants to do. The other thing is that Facebook wants it to kind of be like the currency. It wants it to be a global currency that anyone and everyone can use.
Yeah.
And that is what has a lot of people that, and it's a what they call a stable coin. So it's unlike Bitcoin fluctuates wildly because it's totally, there's nothing to ground its value. It's totally based on trade and speculation.
Sure. Yeah.
A stable coin would rather have a basket of real world assets to back it, to give it a price floor, to minimize how much it fluctuates.
Okay.
And so, but the idea is that these low volatility assets like cash reserves and, you know, government bonds are going to be denominated in other currencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The issue with, one of the issues with Libra is that Facebook wants it to be everyone to use it. So, and in our world of fiat currencies, money only has, you know, the piece of plastic we have only has money, as only has value because the government says it does. And that value is determined relative to other pieces of paper that other governments say has value.
Sure, yeah.
So, so the demand for a currency goes up when people want to use it, and it goes down when people don't.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, if people start using Libra instead of those currencies, will then demand for, say, the euro and the US dollar will go down.
Mm.
So what happened, But Libra is, part of its value is derived from assets denominated in the currencies it displaces.
Hmm.
So does that make Libra's value go down?
Does it go up? Does it go?
There's an interesting relationship between the currencies it's displacing and its own value. That's one issue with Libra. The other issue is that as a global currency, it also goes up against a lot of economic assumptions we have,
mm-hmm.
such as what we call in economics, what's called the law of one price, which is that goods in the world are going to cost the same once you account for currency conversions and everything about that, and barring things like transportation and whatnot, the good itself is going to cost the same. So what's going to happen if, like, I don't know, someone in, let's say Morocco is worth, you know, is, let's say, I don't know, you have one jurisdiction or whatever, and you have, you know, on one side, bottle water is worth 5 francs and the bottle mm-hmm. waters are worth, I don't know, 8 francs. Now Libra's coming in and, okay, it's all worth the same. Is that get to not, so is it like, is it 4 Libra everywhere in the world? And then what, and if there's anywhere in the world where water is going to be worth 4 Libra, or sorry, worth 3 Libra or worth 5 Libra, if there's anywhere where that is going to happen, then you have an opportunity for what economists call arbitrage, which is basically trading something from one market to another market to profit on the differences in price.
Okay, yes. Okay, I understand.
That happens a lot in foreign exchange markets,
mm-hmm.
but it happens, those corrections are accounted for almost instantaneously by trading AIs.
Yeah.
And so there's that causes that a lot of economic issues. And then the other one, which is probably one reason why the governments are most skeptical of Libra, is the fact that they don't have, if they're no longer in control of the currency, then they're no longer able to exercise monetary policy, which means they can no longer control the supply of money and therefore use that to help control inflation. That's the goal of that, at least the Bank of Canada. The Bank of Canada's goal is to control the money supply to maintain inflation around 2%.
Mm-hmm.
If people start using Libra, then the bank can't control what the money supply.
Yeah.
And if you look at Greece, a lot of their economic issues were caused by adopting the euro, which removed the Greek government's ability to exercise their own monetary policy, because they basically had a Greek economy, but they had a German currency. It allowed them to import a lot more things than they could have normally if they had a floating currency, and made it a lot harder to export their goods because they had a very expensive currency that should have been a much cheaper relative to their own.
Of course.
So that just made it a lot easier for them to go into debt. So what happens if you have that expanded? You know, that's in the little Eurozone. That's just one continent. What happens if you expand that out to the entire world?
Mm.
You know,
what happens,
you know, what happens when people in countries that, you know, let's take Zimbabwe, for example. You know, they have current, you know, if they still have their hyperinflation, you know, ridiculous and obscene hyperinflation, you know, $1 trillion bills that are worth nothing.
Of course.
And then you suddenly give them a cryptocurrency that's going to be worth the exact same as, you know, Americans,
mm-hmm.
and they can buy the exact same amount of stuff with the exact same amount of currency. It really challenges a lot of our
economic assumptions. Yeah, I think it seems then, from what you're kind of saying, is the reason why countries are so against Libra is because it's going to challenge the typical economic order. It's going to typically challenge how our economics works, and it seems like they are worried they no longer can control. They can no longer control what they can. It's like the fact that what makes this issue even more trickier is this is just a business, like a non-state organization, not elected, just randomly decides this money, you know, and that kind of poses another question. It's like, should we allow this? Should we allow that? You know,
on the one hand, it depends. That kind of also raises questions about how a number of you know, central banks just work, period. They're not elected.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah.
They're not elected. The Federal Reserve in the United States is particularly, was, I'm pretty sure it was originally formed out of bankers.
Yeah. What I meant is, like, you know, okay, as you can tell, I don't know too much about the banking sector, but, like, one could argue, though, the government and the banking does at least work together, right?
Hmm.
So, in that, but then the fact that then maybe it could change relationship. Yeah, maybe.
Governments aren't opposed to cryptocurrency per se. Like China and Japan are looking at building their own.
Mm.
It's just that they want to have control.
The control of it.
They want to have control. They want to be able. They want to have that security. They want to have control. They don't want to be subject to the whims of a foreign power, and let alone a power that's not beholden to any government because it's not a government itself.
Yeah. And you could also argue, well, maybe even, I don't know, could these kind of different governments work with Facebook on this? Would they be willing to do that? Or maybe, or is that kind of out of the question?
I mean, there's 196 governments across the world. One of them is sure. One of them is
probably going to.
One is sure to, but most people aren't, most governments, at least big governments, are like, quite against it.
Yeah, of course.
And there's also just the concern of, while it's supposed to be, you know, it's a separate corporate, and well, Calibra is a separate corporate entity. It's a joint venture with other organizations. It's at an arm's length from Facebook.
Mm.
But even then, people still don't trust. I wouldn't trust Facebook with my finances.
Yeah. I was also about to mention, I don't know if you I think during the senator meetings as well, I can't remember who the guy was, but he was saying about, because obviously Facebook has banned, and I've kind of mentioned a lot on these episodes that Facebook does ban certain individuals, right? What happens to them? Could they access the finances? Because even though they're, you know, like even that, because I know the senator was asking that question to Mark Zuckerberg, was like, you have people like Milo
Yiannopoulos.
Yeah, there you go. Like Milo, I won't say his last name, but like, you know, Milo, you have other individuals who have been banned on Facebook, right? You know, and then he kind of said the question, like, you know, a dollar bill, doesn't matter who you are, if you're a criminal, if you're black, white, all those kind of types of people, all range of individuals can have a dollar note, right? And if you then ban certain people from accessing the note, it kind of stops that. So I think it's like, even that, does that kind of have to be considered as well? Probably.
Well, I think that's an issue with just a lot of digital technologies and finance and as a whole, is that if you don't have access to these technologies and you can't participate in the system,
yeah.
Like anyone can use cash, but you know, a lot, and you can conduct cash transactions without your name or anything, but
of course.
You know, your bank has to have your name, and your bank knows all these things. And there's the paper, there's the digital paper trail. There's a lack of anonymity, and that's a large reason why people wanted to use Bitcoin in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like that's. But in regards to your question of Facebook, I don't know, but whether they, that's a really good question, in that whether the. My guess is that. Since that's arm's length, it might decide on its own, use its own board, but because I don't know to what extent Facebook is able to leverage authority over Calibra. Yeah,
that's the thing.
Because I don't think they're a majority stakeholder.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there was the Libra group was originally 20 corporate, like at least 20 corporations. So if they all share that relatively equally, that's, you know, a 5% stake each. Facebook couldn't strong arm it, but then again, you never know how they've set things up. Maybe Facebook does have a five percent stake, but you know, their shares are worth, you know, have like 20 are worth 20 votes or something.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, we don't know all this because all of it's mostly a lot behind closed doors, so you never kind of know. And I just want to ask, like, you know, the fact that, you know, nations are going against Libra, who might, you know, are going against Libra and things like that, would you say these backlashes are quite warranted, or would you say maybe not? Would they say, is there like another side to this coin, would you say?
I mean, I would say it just, yeah, I would say it's warranted.
Yeah.
Just, it's not, because it's, you know, I think a few years ago, there were some senators were talking, American senators were talking about Bitcoin and just how it worked. And that was kind of, the skepticism they had towards it was more about not understanding the technology, not understanding blockchain.
Yeah.
And not understanding how Bitcoin could function. That was more of a tech, I think that was more technical. The skepticism came from technical, lack of technical knowledge. This, I think, is not based on, it's not like they're like, how does, like, what's, like, what's a cryptocurrency? How does blockchain work? Like, they're not asking those questions. They're like, it's because it's Facebook, it's the corporation, it's the history they have.
Of course.
And it's the way in which they're going about it and the potential implications that that could have. And that one particular coin in particular, there's dozens of cryptocurrencies out there, if not hundreds, potentially thousands. But legal. That's the one that has, that's the one that has, you know, that has Zuckerberg commanding it.
Of course.
That's the one that people are going to shudder when they think Facebook money. Ugh.
Yeah. If it wasn't, that's, I was going to ask maybe like an alternative future. Let's say Facebook didn't have this reputation, didn't have this dodgy reputation of privacy and all data and things like that. Maybe would this debate go unnoticed? Maybe would countries be more advocating for this? I don't know. It's an interesting question because it seems like because it's Facebook, that's why people are getting scared about it. That's why people are like, no, this isn't, because it's super weird because it's like we put now most of our financial data now is, let's say, on kind of online now. We kind of, well, I don't know, like, you know, yeah, ish.
It's all online.
All online. Okay, fair enough. All online now, right? So we're fine with doing that, even though one could argue this is, you could say it's a little bit dodgy because it could be up to hacking, maybe, or that kind of ideas. But then as soon as like Facebook comes along and says, oh, we're going to potentially launch something like called Libra, you know, a cryptocurrency, everyone's like, oh no, that's super bad. So maybe it's like in an alternative future, let's say Facebook was a good, quote unquote, good company, didn't do this kind of stuff with privacy, maybe this would have gone ahead as smoothly as it could. Maybe. I don't know.
I'm sure there could have been a potential future where, you know, it went along all rosy and totally great.
Yeah.
But I still think, I think part of it is also just, it has the Facebook name. It's a very recognizable name. It's not like some company out of nowhere.
Of course.
But I still think it would still, even just a lot of the economic challenges it presents,
yeah,
would still raise
would
a lot
still
of
raise it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's the fact that it's associated with such a high profile name is what makes it a more high profile story.
Of course. Absolutely. And just because I kind of mentioned about like up for hacking and things like that, you know, going a little bit away from Libra, would you say though it's pretty scary though that we are putting our finances more online rather than like physical paper form? Like, even though you could argue, yes, we're spending less on paper, you know, it's like it's better for the environment if we're doing less paper, more digital, but then it's like, is our financial information super safe online? That's my kind of worry. That's my kind of, when looking into our day and age, like, even though for me it's great to see like I can just check my bank account online, like on online banking, and see, okay, I got such and such amount of money, that's fine, right? I can do like a little pin, I can even do facial recognition if I really wanted to, even though that's a little bit dodgy there. You know, it's great, like it's very efficient, very easy for the consumer because they don't have to go all the way down to a bank, check their bank details, right? But at the same time, do we have safeguards to protect our financial data when it's all online and we don't have it like physically? Would you say that's still quite scary? Do you think it's, I don't know.
Well, I'm not a cryptographer, but I would say that one, no system's going to be foolproof. Mm-hmm. There will always be the risk. But the other thing I would say is, well, these are concerns that people would have had 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as banks stopped keeping their records on paper and started keeping it in some kind of digital system, our money moved over to being digital.
Yeah.
The bulk of the money in the world is kept in bank reserves or not in cash. Cash makes up just a sliver of the money supply.
Sure.
So, I mean, no one's hacked Bank of America yet. You know, they've been, all these banks have been, you know, I guess I would say that banks are probably one industry that take digital security very seriously.
Oh yeah, of course.
And
must do.
But yeah, I would say it's not foolproof. But I haven't heard of anyone hacking and transferring, you know, wiring $20 billion, you know, $200 million out of Bank of America.
Like, I kind of know, like, I think I've heard cases where, let's say, for example, certain information, bank information, was released, for example, by accident. Let's say that. But I don't know how.
Because it also depends there's also different kinds of information that can get leaked and different ways they can store it. Like, they can, maybe they have, you know, maybe certain pieces of information like names and addresses aren't kept securely or encrypted, but like bank account things like bank account numbers are going to be, like, that's the thing, is they can all be stored in different ways in different archives and different files and different databases with different levels of security and encryption. They're not gonna they're gonna take, it'll take certain things with more will have a different priority over others.
Of course. Yeah, I feel like maybe people would feel, even though it's like, what would you choose? Would you rather choose, you know, your address slightly being released, or would you rather choose your financial information being released?
I would say is,
what would you rather have? Maybe
One, I'd rather have my address be leaked than my financial
data. That's the thing.
But the other thing is, I would say is the concern over the security of it is kind of late. I would say is because we've already done it.
Yeah,
we have ATMs. That's,
oh yeah, true.
We have ATMs. We've had ATMs for years. True. We, you know, as soon as you had magnetic swipes, credit cards coming out in the 70s, like, these are things that the digitization of money is a process that's been happening for like 50 years at least.
That's a good point.
And it's something that's becoming more visible. I think it's becoming more visible now, but it's different.
Yeah,
it's not new. It's just we have new ways of processing our money, but the money itself has always been stored in digital means.
It's like adapted in that way. It's kind of in that sense, it's like it's pretty much adapted. It's kind of it's like from each, I think it's maybe because, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm kind of young. I didn't really see it. Maybe if I was a bit older, I would have seen, there's been a massive dramatic change, but maybe because I'm so used to it, like an ATM, for example, I was super used to that. But then when the ATMs came about, it was like maybe the first sort of change to making our finances a bit more digital, maybe. I don't know. But like, it's kind of...
It also just depends, I think, on the culture and just what means are common and useful.
Of course.
Like... Canadians, we've had chip and PIN technology on our credit and debit cards for years. Americans just got it like 5 years ago or something like that. Got it recently. Yeah.
I think the UK might have been the same time as America. I don't know.
Or similarly, like when Apple and Google Play launched, Americans, didn't have that kind of wireless infrastructure. But we did, because we've had Interact Flash and the Tap for a long time. We have a more card-based culture here. We have that kind of financial infrastructure. I remember I went to Germany once and I couldn't even buy a ticket on the metro with a card, with a credit card, because it was all cash. That trip to Europe, I have a little pouch. I have a wallet with a pouch for coins. I got that wallet in Italy because I had so much cash and so much change, because everyone was like, cash, we'll give you a €5 discount if you pay cash. Everyone wanted to use cash. And my experience as a young person in Canada, young people use cash when they're buying drugs, when they're buying things they can't use with cards. And now Cannabis NB accepts credit cards. So why do I even take anything out?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll put that in. We'll just leave that. I'll just leave it. It's fine. That's the thing. I agree. I find I kind of buy stuff more, like less with cash. Not not because of that, but like, yeah, I just kind of use I just use like my card pretty much just to kind of you know, buy kind of stuff now, because I feel like it's for me it's much more easier than cash. I feel like you know, it's so much easier, but then it's, of course, you didn't have to question, like, you know, how safe is it? And maybe it is, maybe it's not. You know, nothing's 100% safe, but, you know, I can at least trust bank systems to be,
I mean, it's safe in a different way. You know, now you can walk around with your wallet and don't have to worry about someone mugging you because
you're not carrying cash
anymore. But now, you know, if someone took your wallet, like, okay, cool, the wallet's worth more than the money I have in there.
Yeah, that's a great.
And I'll just call my bank, cancel the card, and get a new one.
Yeah.
You haven't touched my money. And even if you did somehow make a purchase, well, so like MasterCard, Visa, all the banks, Interac are all you have zero liability for purchases you don't make.
Yeah,
fair enough. Like, if they did, well, cool, it's not, that's not on you.
Yeah, well, touch wood, I don't get my wallet stolen. But yeah, just kind of finishing off, like, you know, we're talking about futurology, obviously, as last episode. Like, what could be a possible future of finance? Do you think Libra will be launched, finally launched? Will it be approved? Will it, you know, will our data become, will our financial data become more and more, like, where would it evolve? Let's say, because I think we all know, I think it's most likely or not that our finances are going to stay digital and become even more digitalized. But it's like, what will it look like? That's the bigger question. Like, what could possibly happen, let's say?
Well, there's a lot that could happen. I would think that we would see more and diverse investment vehicles.
Okay.
More and diverse things to invest in. And they'll definitely be able to have different ways to invest. You can invest much more smaller. You're gonna definitely have, I think it'll be cheaper to invest as well. Sure. As we get more blockchain smart contracts and all that, you don't really need to have middlemen anymore. Mm-hmm. Or even, I think you're going to see a lot of it's going to be processed automatically.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you might even have AIs doing the transactions, even negotiating price. There's all sorts of ways to go. It's just a matter of, you know, I think we're going to see a commodification of a lot of things. It's just a matter of where you want to draw the line.
Yeah. It's like, now think about that. You know, you talked about like AI, the fact that AI might then decide. It's like, do we really trust a computer to do all this? Even though you could argue a computer is a lot more intelligent than human beings, you're relying on a computer for your finances and deciding the date, like deciding a certain value of something is quite interesting. But also another idea, because I just thought about this in my head, it's like, what about jobs as well in the banking industry? I don't know. Like, you could argue the fact that now, like, you know, the AI is, I don't know, like, not replacing, how do I word this? Like, even though the AI is deciding what value of certain money is, maybe there are people out there who decide, like, okay, this is worth such and such, or, you know, like, the actual, how do I pronounce it? It's like, because we've seen, you know, technology and, like, automation, right, replacing jobs, could you argue that automation AI could do the same thing within the banking industry or the finance industry?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I meant, yeah.
There's so, I mean, look at how few tellers there are now compared to 10, 20 years ago.
Mm.
A lot of trading is just done by AIs.
Yeah, of course.
Because they can react instantaneously and, you know, it's like the New York Stock Exchange. They make sure that everyone has like the exact same amount of like fiber optic wire, so everything travels the exact same distance, so everyone gets the exact, like, so no one has like a microsecond time advantage over other people to make transactions just a fraction of a second faster.
Yeah, so it's just adapting it and stuff.
Yeah, it's you'll see a lot of, you know, I think you'll see a lot of AI investment funds. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. You can easily set up an AI to just do an index fund.
Of course.
Like, it's not like a lot. You can say AI, but as AI's can sound scary, but it's really just going to be like, if the, it's really just a whole bunch of series of if this, then that statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, for like a price negotiating AI is going to be like, okay, if the price is this, then we want this. If it's, if it has these qualities, do this. If it has this defect, you know, try to negotiate this, try to haggle with it.
Do it and stuff.
And you can have another one that'll do the exact same thing. It's just, it's like a game basically. Mm-hmm. You have two AIs that are basically trying to make a game and trying to reach a deal that they both find optimal.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, so it kind of seems it's, yeah, it's pretty much.
And you can
much.
Always show it, and they can always, and they can always, if they choose, if the developers choose, they can always make it show, you know, the criteria for arriving at its decisions. You know, okay, you, you know, it had this defect, or you tried to haggle 15% off or whatever, you know, showing justifications as to how it arrived at price, and it can always, you know, consent.
Yeah,
it can show you, hey, we arrived at this price. Do you want to buy this for $14.99, or do you want to buy it at, you know, I haggled it down from $15.99 to $14.73. Is that cool with you? Cool.
Yeah, you kind of just do that. It's kind of, yeah, quicking financial exchanges pretty much. So it should be interesting. And what else would you say might be? What else would you think could happen as well with finances? Would you say, okay, you mentioned AI, is there anything else would you say, or would you say it predominantly will be more controlled by AI, would you say? Or I don't know if
it'll be controlled by AI, but it's AI is a tool.
Yeah, it'll be a tool.
It's going to be controlled by the same, you know, rich Wall Street bankers who are just using computers to do their work instead of some gruntman.
Yeah,
but it's still that.
No, true. That's fair enough. But yeah, all right. No, thanks very much again, John, for coming in. And yeah, really interesting conversation to talk about, like, you know, the future of finance, and, you know, look into Libra, looking into kind of ideas around that, and also, yeah, looking into how our money is being used, pretty much. So yeah, so thank you for everyone who's been listening. You can check out this episode on, you know, Spotify or Anchor. We have a few other episodes up on there as well, and yeah, you can visit them as well. So yeah, thanks very much, guys, and yeah, see you soon.